Over. You testing?
Audience over there.
I just want to make sure everyone can hear me. Huh? You guys, your necks are going to get sore if you don't kind of turn. Huh. My name is Sherry Neibauer. And I am a drug addict and alcoholic.
Hello, Sherry.
My sobriety date is May 11th, 1996. Can you hear me? Okay. Whew. All right. When Jan called about a month ago, I seen her number on the phone, and I didn't answer it because I was busy taking care of my grandbaby. And I thought, oh no, something must have happened to somebody. And she's calling to inform me, you know? So I returned her phone call right away, and then she called back, and that's when she asked me to speak here tonight. And I said, well, yeah, the name of the group is First Things First. That's my baseball team, too. So I had to speak here, you know. I'm a little nervous. I know. I get that all the time. The other day, I just want to share this real quick. The other day, I was talking to a couple people, and as you hear my story, I am one who breaks my own anonymity. You know, I don't regret my past, and I don't shut the door on it, and it's made me who I am today, basically. And so I'm talking in this conversation, and it came about that I'm a recovering drug addict and alcoholic. And this girl, she looks at me wide-eyed. She's like, wow, you don't look like a drug addict and alcoholic. And that had me thinking, you know, I was like, what am I supposed to look like, you know? All right, I had to share that with you. Okay, my story is like everybody else's, you know. I was a little innocent child, you know. I grew up, had to deal with some issues as a child, and was introduced to drugs and alcohol, you know, via friends who started out smoking pot, just like I've heard in a couple other stories. So basically, I'm not going to dread on the past, you know, but I am going to just tell you a couple instances just so you can, I don't like standing behind this thing.
Get closer.
Yeah, get closer. So you can get to know me a little bit, okay? I was basically raised as an only child, even though I have siblings. There was such an age difference. They were grown out of the house, and then I was an oops. I came along. Growing up, I was adopted when I was three by my dad, who I don't talk to anymore. It's because I choose not to. I basically grew up in the bar setting. My mom, she worked two jobs. One of them was tending bar. She didn't have a babysitter. I went with her. I washed the glasses behind the bar. And I remember being a kid thinking, I want to grow up, not to be a doctor or a nurse or a teacher or a fireman. I wanted to grow up to be a bartender. Because it was so cool, you know? Washing the glasses, getting the grenadine. So that was my introduction basically into the bar world. I did grow up to be a bartender, and I was good at it. You know, people say, is there anything that you miss, you know, about the bar scene or being out there? I have to be honest, that's the one thing I do miss, is because I have the personality to be behind that bar and blah, blah, blah. But I don't miss it enough to do it on a regular basis anymore. Sorry. Okay, so I was basically raised in the bar setting. My siblings were older, so I really didn't have any. You know, I was, as my mom would say, the best child out of the four. And by always hearing this, I felt like I was on this pedestal. So I always felt I had to live up to this number one child, you know. That's hard to do, you know. It's a lot of pressure on a child to be number one. And it was tough. And I'm forgetting where I'm going here. Raised. Okay, pressure. Just bear with me. Let's just say awe. Come on. Yes. Yes, I can. Sure, I can. I can.
Right, yeah. Get closer.
All right. I was very close to a couple people in my life. I was close to my grandma. I was close to my sister Susan. And obviously I tried to be close to myself, but I couldn't. I say that because my childhood was basically taken away from me by my father and my brother. And you're gonna hear later on in my story, I don't blame that for being a drug addict and alcoholic. But it is part of my life, and it is one of the reasons why I started to abuse drugs and alcohol. By working the program and kind of, you know, taking a personal inventory of myself, I had a lot of resentment towards my dad and my brother. I had resentment towards God. God took my grandma away from me. And that's the way I perceived it at age 11. God took the closest person to me away from me. The one person at the time that I thought was there to protect me. He took her away. My sister Susan, when I was 16, another person that I got very close to, God took her away from me. I started drinking around 14, dealing with the grandma thing, dealing with the incest, and I was never really a social drinker right off the bat. I would pay bums, a National Liquor Bar. Does anybody remember that place? Yeah. I think it's a Walgreens now, maybe? I don't know. Something like that. So anyways, I would pay the homeless guys to go into the National Liquor Bar and get me Doonesbury wine. I would take that wine. I would walk through the alleys back home because at the time I lived on 25th and Lapham-ish, and I would drink the wine by myself. And of course, being 14, 15 years old, that was enough for me. It got me to where I wanted to be. And at that time, where I wanted to be was I wanted to forget that I was this goody-goody child on this pedestal. I wanted to forget the bad things that happened to me, and I wanted to get rid of the sadness that I didn't have my grandmother, okay? That happened for probably a good year. Then I thought of killing myself. I was in high school. I thought of killing myself. Went to the drug counselor, told him, he found out that I, you know, was doing the drinking thing by myself. Started going to these weekly meetings, and then I was introduced to AA. And that was the first introduction to AA that I had, and the 12-step program. I did good probably for a year or two, you know. I didn't drink, you know, and I got involved. I got a sponsor at the time, and I worked the steps, but I was 15 years old, 16, and all the AA people were 60, 70, 80 years old, you know? Yeah, they were old timers. I think what I found there at the time was a grandma and a grandpa that I was once close to and didn't have anymore. And it gave me a feeling of completion at the time. I started speaking at schools, talking about incest. In fact, that's basically where I got the recovery from the childhood episodes and stuff, was when I was speaking to other kids younger than me. So anyways, my life for a while was perfect then. Then my sister died, and I didn't get it. You know, I was still angry with God. Still angry. I graduated high school. I turned 18. I got a bartender's license, you know? I had a drinking problem when I was 14, 15. I was young. I didn't know how to drink, okay? Now I'm 18 and I'm tending bar. It was the greatest thing, you know? It was my dream come true. I wanted to grow up and be a bartender. I tended bar for quite a few years. I bought a brand new car. Yes. 10 months later, it was stolen. God, he's always taking things away from me, you know? Always. I didn't get it. The night that my car was stolen, and I have to go back. When Susan died of diabetes, but she was also partying the night that she died. She was doing cocaine the night that she died, went into an insulin reaction, and all the other people were so screwed up, they didn't know what to do for her. So I despised cocaine for quite a few years. Or, okay, 2 or 3 years. The car stolen. I go to the bar, I'm mad, I'm drinking, I'm real mad because I just don't get it. I just can't have anything for myself, you know? It's me, me, me. Go into the bathroom. A friend of mine says, here, why don't you try that? I said, no. Come on, one's not gonna hurt you. I said, fine. I took the one. I took another. And you know what? For the next year and a half, I liked it. And I continued to do it. It was the one thing that nobody, or not even God, could take away from me. It made me feel strong. It made me feel complete. The cocaine and the alcohol made me not have to be on this pedestal anymore. I could be me. That's what I felt. I felt I could be me. And if you didn't like me for me, I didn't care, you know? Today, I thank God that I didn't have to do cocaine for 20 years. I did cocaine for a year and a half. I've always had a high tolerance for everything. I had a high tolerance for alcohol. I had a high tolerance for cocaine right off the bat. Obviously, I started smoking it just like everybody else. I always said I wasn't going to shoot up, and by the grace of God, I never shot up yet. One day, I came home from a night out. Mom was drunk. She knew what I was doing out there. She woke me up like she always does. She always had a habit when she was drunk to come in, yell at me, slam the door. Come back in a minute later. I got that habit too, by the way, except I don't do it drunk. Come back in, yell at me again, slam the door even harder, going back and forth. The last time she came in, she actually grabbed me out of bed, grabbed my head, pointed me into the mirror, and said, "Look at yourself. Look at what you've become." And you know what? I love my mom dearly. She did the best she could. But as a mom, now, that's probably the best thing, besides giving me a roof over my head and giving me what I needed, it's probably the best thing that my mom did for me. I looked in the mirror. I'm sorry, back up. I didn't really look in the mirror. She left. When I knew she wasn't going to come back in and go back out, I got back up. I looked in that mirror. And I started crying. Because it's not who I wanted to be. It's not who I was. You know? It wasn't me. I called up a friend. She took me to Elmbrook Memorial, 30-day rehab. My problem was cocaine. It had a hold on me. Went into rehab, did all the things. I never admitted the fact that I had a problem with alcohol. You know, I went into the 30-day rehab. It was cocaine. I wanted to get rid of the cocaine habit. I didn't want to ever do it again. I hated it. Got out of rehab. They warned me, don't go back to tending bar. I said, that's what I like, that's what I do. You know, don't do it, I'm fine. I went back to tending bar. I was fine for a week. I started drinking. I then eventually relapsed, okay? I relapsed for about a month or two. I met this guy. And I fell in love, and I got pregnant. I was told I could never have kids, and I got pregnant. And I drank the first month of my pregnancy. I was a month pregnant, but I drank real hard the day I found out because I couldn't believe it. But then I stopped. I stopped drinking for the 9 months, and I didn't use cocaine for that 9 months. I believe now that God had a part to do with that, because for me, the love of my unborn child was strong enough to keep me sober temporarily. That makes sense. Okay. Okay. I had Amanda. I stayed off of cocaine probably until she was about a year old. She was a year old and I relapsed. Now this is how I could tell that the disease progresses. You know, this is what I learned in the program, or the rehab, how the disease progresses, blah, blah, blah. I used to be totally against. I was up here when I would party. I wasn't down here yet. I always partied with people that I was above. Okay? So that meant I would party. I just had to be better than. Amanda was almost a year old, and I decided to leave the majority of my money at home, okay? I wasn't going to blow all my money this time, you know, because that's not what I was going to do because I'm a mom. I was against people that did things for drugs. I was totally against all that. This particular night, I found myself partying with the lower class people, and I became lower than them that night. I ran out of money, and I refused to go home and get the money. So I became a person I despised that night. I came home at 11 o'clock in the morning. I looked down at my one-year-old. She had a red shirt on and blue overalls. She looked at me, wanted me to pick her up and hug her. I was so geeked out and so depressed at what I had just done the night before. I looked at her and I had to walk away from her. I went to bed. 7 o'clock that night, I woke up. I come out, she's in her pajamas. It was that moment that I swore that I would never again miss a day of my child's life for doing the wrong thing. And you know what? Today I have missed a couple of days of my kid's life, but it wasn't for doing the right or the wrong thing. It was for doing the right thing. I had to work, you know, or I had to go to a meeting or whatever. So that was my bottom, was coming home that night, finding out that the disease does progress no matter how long you stay away from it, you know. My husband and I, we came to, it was a Wednesday night, DePaul meeting. And that was our first CA meeting together. We went to a couple of them, then we went to Vision for You. And that's where I met Sherry Jonath and asked her to be my sponsor. She had what I wanted. You want to know what she had? Yeah. She had a husband in recovery. She had two girls. I have two girls. She went to college for accounting. I went to college for accounting. She had what I wanted. She had this perfect family in recovery. That's what I wanted, was this perfect family in recovery. It wasn't until we started working steps 1, 2, and 3 that I realized she really had what I wanted. And that basically was sobriety. You know, she was always so happy-go-lucky in these meetings, giving everyone hugs, blah, blah, blah. She had the same type of personality as I did. She had what I wanted, and I got what she has. We went through steps 1, 2, and 3. All at once. I was kind of juggling a lot when I came into recovery. You know, I was working, I was married, I had two kids, you know, so we wanted to get me to step 3 because just like, I think it was Lewis reading that reading, and in fact, Angie even said, that's what we were just talking about. God, it's about God. It is about God. Whatever your understanding of Him is. Step 3 is probably my favorite and most used step. I turn my will and my life over to the care of God all the time. By working steps 1, 2, and 3, that for me got rid of the obsession to use. You know, I didn't want to use anymore. I wanted to be a better mom. I wanted to be a better wife. I wanted to be a better person. A lot of people are afraid of step 4 and 5. I wasn't. Because you know what? When I was all geeked up sitting around those tables, I was open. I was an open book trying to find somebody crazy enough out there to disagree with me, you know? So as far as steps 4 and 5, I wasn't afraid of them. 6 and 7, I still work on 6 and 7. You know, I have lots and lots of shortcomings, even to this day. I got to open up my notes again here. I didn't know what time I started here. What time did I start? Anybody know? 8?
10.
Earlier.
Okay. Well, I'm almost done. All right. I got a sponsor. I got very involved. I think I was going about 4 or 5 meetings a week. What worked for me is, I've always, people that know me, you hear me say it all the time, in order to forget the old, I had to surround myself with the new. And what I mean by that is, in order to let go of my old friends, I had to surround myself with the new ones. Hey, Scott. And that's exactly what I did. I went out for coffee. I went out, I showed up at meetings before the meeting. I set out ashtrays when you could still smoke in the facilities. I made coffee. I was a greeter. I became one of those hugging people. I got involved. Eventually, I was a secretary at a meeting. I was a treasurer at a meeting. And I said, I want to keep my sanity. I will never be a GSR. And guess what? I've never become a GSR. I did special events for quite a few years, you know. I was involved. I sponsored people. I felt I was a good sponsor for a person's probably 6 months, you know, because I could still relate. I, in recovery, grew a little slower than most people. I envy the people that were able to just work on themselves, you know, because I wasn't able to just work on me. I was a wife and a mom and a worker and a daughter, blah, blah, blah. So I progressed a little slower. So I was only able to really be a halfway decent sponsor for so long, you know. And so for me, the biggest part was God turning my will and my life over and being involved and getting to know everybody. Sharing my experience, strength, and hope. I learned how to use the tools and utilize those in my life today. The program and the steps taught me that I had a condition. And that condition was basically me. You know, yes, it was the drugs and alcohol. But the condition was me, how I dealt with life and issues. It made me realize that I was powerless and helpless. Through the steps, I learned how to access and utilize God. And again, Lewis, when you were reading that's what it is. It's God. It wasn't just for sobriety, but it's for everyday life. Because getting sober at the time felt like it was hard. But what is really challenging is living life on life's terms. When these bigger deals happen, I don't have a line or a pipe or a needle or a glass to turn to. I have a sponsor, I have a CA meeting, an AA meeting to turn to. And that's okay today. I have God, basically, too. I forgot him, and even though I don't forget him, I forgot him. I'm a true believer that everybody in this world should work a 12-step program. Really, the world would be a much better place, you know. I kind of look at it as we are fortunate to be addicts and alcoholics because we get to better our life and to live and use the tools that are taught and given to us. I've had quite a few situations in life in recovery. I got divorced in the program. I got remarried in the program. My kids grew up in the program. It's the best thing that I ever did for my kids because they learned the 12-step program. And believe it or not, they actually utilize it. And they're all 19 almost and 16. I do want to share, there was one time in my couple of years of sobriety that I was, I don't want to say I was this close to giving up, but the thought was there and a hand was there. And I made the decision not to, and I called my sponsor and I went to a meeting. It was when my oldest daughter stole my husband's truck. She crashed it into a tree, and just beyond that tree was like a cliff. So God was that tree, you know. So that life, that was a life-changing situation for her, and very trying for me and my husband and my youngest daughter, and for the whole family. I was at work, and it was just one of those days, and you know, she got out of the hospital, and then she's facing expulsion and all this stuff, and I'm thinking, why? I get on a pity pot. You can even get on a pity pot sober. Really? Yo, you can. And I do it, not often, but every now and then. But the difference is I realize it and I can hop off of it real quick. But it was so overwhelming, you know, because I felt that I did something or I didn't do something. And where I used to work, they used to have beer in the fridge, you know. And I was leaving one day, and I grabbed a beer out of the refrigerator, took it to my car. Sitting in my car, I opened it, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I about to do, you know? And I opened my car door, and I dumped it out. I drove home, and I'm crying. My husband's home, and I said, I had an open beer, and I almost, you know, and I called my sponsor, and I went to a meeting, and then I started going to the meetings quite often like I did in the beginning again, because it was so overwhelming. Life was so overwhelming that I needed you guys again. Turns out, my kid learned from her mistake, and she does what we do. We share our experience, strength, and hope with others. Amanda does that. Amanda graduated from school, and you know, she turned herself around, and it was just a moment, you know. Another life-changing experience. except this time, because it was with the second child, I didn't have to reach for a can of beer, because I've already been through this kind of this similar situation, you know. I'm a grandma. I'm a proud grandma, but when Angie came home and told me that she was pregnant, I was beside myself. But I'm a true believer, everything happens for a reason. I don't know what that reason is sometimes when it happens. Sometimes I'll never find out what that reason is, but I know what the reason was for Amanda. And I know what the reason was for Angie. And if I can get over those two instances, because you know what? The hardest thing for me to do in recovery, now that the obsession to use is gone, the desire to use is gone, is to be a mom and to let go now that my kids are growing up. That's the hardest thing for me today is. And for me to say that that's the hardest thing for me to do today, that's pretty awesome, you know? The hardest thing isn't me to worry about if I'm gonna use tonight when I go home. It's not there anymore. God has given me a family in Waukesha, and he's given me the family here. And I'm blessed with both. If there's anything that I can say to a newcomer or people that can't grasp it completely yet, is don't give up. There's people out there that care about you no matter what, you know, whether you believe it or not. And if you keep coming back and you keep reaching out and you keep asking for help before you use, you learn to trust others. You work the program, you work your 12 steps, you find your higher power, your connection, and you turn it over to Him. You turn everything over to Him, you know? That's how it works. It's how it worked for me. And you know what? I've heard that's how it works for a lot of other people. And I used to be known as Sherry from CA. And that was kind of that, you know, that little grandiose thing. You know, we all have that in us. I like that. I got married. People are like, oh, your life is so boring. I got married. I work. I go home. I'm a mom. I sit and watch movies. You know who I'm known as now? Jeff Nibauer's wife. What the hell is that? So, I am about to pass, and I want to thank everybody again. And I hope there was some little part of me babbling here tonight that you're able to take and share with somebody. My name is Sherry. I'm an addict and alcoholic. And this is what an addict alcoholic looks like.
Good job, Sherry. Good job.